WHPC Garden City. The views and opinions expressed by the hosts or guests on this radio station, which is owned and operated by Nassau Community College, are not the opinion of Nassau Community College, its administration, or its employees.
You're listening to the Motor Mouths.
Hey, Motor Mouths! What's up, boys?
Firstly, I want to express the great pleasure I take in knowing these two men.
Motor Mouth!
Yeah, Rob, you called an automotive talk show.
Oh, did I really?
Yeah. Yes, you did.
You want to talk about car complaints?
Our trained staff of two will help.
And they know if you're doing a certain activity, whether it's motorcycling, you're under a car, you hump it.
What would a Thursday or a Sunday be without you guys?
Oh, there must be something wrong with my car.
Quite frankly, there are better things to do with your time.
You know what scares me? Everybody that calls you know.
Are we on the air?
It's like, are these old cousins or something?
Okay, listen, don't you guys know I have the answers to everything?
Yeah, I want to know what the is wrong with my car.
I just want to call and say, very good show. Very cool, those guys on there.
Motor Mouth!
I was told the importance of my bolts and where do they go.
Somehow that sounds pornographic.
I think there's smoke coming out of my headphones.
I'm enjoying the conversation listening to you guys.
I drive junk now. It's much better.
Are you the young man that used to fix the cars in the driveway in Brooklyn?
Somebody will call about God knows what, and you see the wheels turning around, go, oh, yeah. You do this, you do that. You go down to the deli, you make a sandwich, you come back, it's fixed.
So you guys have a great team. I have heard you guys before. You have a lot of fun. You seem to enjoy what you're doing.
There are answers, sometimes correct ones, and we may have them.
Mouth Radio, 90.3 FM, WHPC.
Motor Mouth!
This is Motor Mouth Radio, your one-hour automotive talk show.
To the Motor
and
Mouth.
Now, here are your Motor Mouths, Chris Switzer and Ray Guarino.
Alrighty, it's
yeah, we're still doing it.
We got stuff just rocking and rolling all over here. This is Motor Mouth Radio, your one-hour automotive talk show right here on Long Island. What's up, Bubby?
I hear nothing.
You hear nothing?
I don't hear myself.
I hear you. Can you hear you?
Then we're good. If you hear me, we're okay.
I hear you. You're just fine.
I don't hear
just imagining if the callers can hear you.
We'll find out.
Yeah, we should. Let's see if we can.
Let's find out.
Let's answer the phone right now here at Motor Mouth Radio. Hi, you're on with the Motor Mouths.
Hey, this is Joe Oldham.
Hey,
Joe!
What's up, Joe? We didn't even get a chance to give you the big introduction yet. How are you?
You sent out an email. That's enough.
Yeah, well, I tell you, last week we took the whole first 15 minutes of the show pumping Marty, of course, Marty Shore.
From Motion Performance.
And it was the best sell job in the world. If he could have heard it, he would have been proud.
So listen for the next minute because we're going to introduce you.
Okay.
Hold on. We got to find Ray a set of headphones first. You see how slipshod this show really is. Try those, Ray.
Thank you, Chris. Charm.
What was that?
That's what gives it its charm.
Oh, is that what you call it?
Yeah, we try really hard not to call it charm, that's for sure.
Right.
We call it a lot of other things. But we are here at Motor Mouth Radio. We have one of the foremost street racers from the 60s and 70s. Am I right?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. A man who wrote for
Cars Magazine.
Cars Magazine and tested some of the hottest muscle cars at their time. And you tested them in the most extraordinary way by secretly taking them out onto the street and racing unbeknownst other hot rodders.
I don't know if it was much of a secret.
Well, I guess we want to call a unplanned exercise. How's that?
It was real product placement testing, I think.
It sure was. You know. So, an individual with so much racing history and so much knowledge and so many stories are with us today at Motor Mouth Radio. Joe Oldham, author of Muscle Car Confidential, Tales of a Muscle Car Test Driver, right? I always get that last line wrong. I always remember Muscle Car Confidential.
Yeah, read it off the book right here.
Right. Confessions of a Muscle Car Test Driver. Yes.
Right. After that introduction, I can't wait to hear what I'm going to say.
Well, I'll tell you something, Joe. We're not worried because we have had some guests on the show where the introduction was the best part of the show. Unlike today where, you know, we have such great positive feedback when people like you come on the show, which are not really many. I mean, you and Marty, of course, stand out above the rest.
Mm.
'Cause that's what guys love to do. We love to talk about it. We've done it. We still do it.
Yeah.
And, you know, you in your book, you said you had the best job in the world at the time. You just didn't know it.
It was fantastic. But hey, before we talk about cars, guy, I got to say something.
Sure.
How about those Yankees?
You know, Joe, you got it, man. We 27, 27.
Yeah.
And Unbelievable, right?
Yeah, Godzilla.
It's a little weird. I'm out here in California these days, and nobody here, you know, they never heard of the Yankees. Last night, I picked up some Chinese food, and I say to the guy behind the counter as I'm leaving, "Go Yanks." He goes, "Huh?"
Nah, they bombed us.
I know. Yeah. You know.
I tell you something.
What are you going to do?
Well, I'll make a we'll make an exception today because you brought it up and you're a guest, but I linked the Yankees winning this World Series, the 27th win of World Series.
Right.
They had their own Fantastic Five, which of course Motion did.
Right.
Back in the day.
That's correct.
Right. Mm-hmm. Motion had the cars: the Nova, the Camaro, the Chevelle, the Biscayne, and the Corvette. But the Yankees have Pettit, Jeter, Posada, Rivera, and Girardi.
It's amazing.
Wow.
It
really
is.
So it was really cool that the forces that would be conspired to make that happen on a day that you call. So
Andy got the win.
Yeah.
It was really fantastic.
It was. It was a very good game. From what little I've seen of it, it was a very good game.
All right, back to cars.
Yeah, it was, you know, it was kind of like they had the whole shot. They whole shot the opponent. They had them at 60-foot half track, and they just pulled them right through the top end.
They got a great time, and they went on from there.
Right.
Hey,
exactly.
I listened to the show last week with my pal Marty. I don't know if you guys realize it, but Marty Shore and I have been great friends for more than 40 years, actually 44 years to be exact. And that in itself is a rarity.
What a gift.
I believe it,
Jeff. We've thrown a punch at each other. I mean, it's really amazing.
How did you guys actually meet, Joe?
Well, here's what happened. I was a graduate of NYU. I was looking for a job. I read all the car magazines because I was already a car nut. And my favorite was High Performance Cars. It was New York-based.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't that effete West Coast vibe from it, like Hot Rod and Car Craft.
Had a little grit to it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. And it was, you know, it was a little more gritty. It had that New York attitude. So I liked it. So I graduated from NYU, and I had a couple of articles that I'd written in my hand, and I walked in. And I met first the managing editor, a guy named Fred McElrod, who was still a great friend.
Mm-hmm.
And he read them and he said, "Yeah, these aren't bad, kid, you know." And he took me in to see Marty, and bless his soul, he gave me a shot. And I just, you know, I went on from there. He taught me a lot as we went on. And I feel like, you know, at least I contributed something to the success of the magazine in those days. And it was a great partnership, and as I said, we're friends to this day. And it was great hearing him talk about a lot of the old speed shops out in that way, because, you know, I used to go out there as a kid and, you know, stand in front of S&S Speed Shop on Atlantic Avenue in Queens and, you know, watch the older guys pull up with their hot rods and, you know, be cool. And I wanted to be one of them, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, I got my shot. It was a little different. I never had a street rod per se, but as you just said, I just wound up in what could possibly be the greatest job of all time, where, you know, I drove every new car that came out, at least the high performance models.
Right.
I took them to the track to test them. I drove them around as if they were my own for a week or two.
Drove them like you stole them.
I went street racing with them,
yeah.
And I got paid for it.
Right.
Can you believe it?
Incredible.
You know, Joe, just the short introduction you had, you've brought up about five or six topics I want to touch on. And one of them that I have bullet pointed was Fred McElrod.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about Dilbert Farb?
Dilbert Farb?
Yeah.
I'll tell you, Fred is one of the most creative guys I ever met in my life, and one of the funniest. He has a tremendous sense of humor. And he was the managing editor at High Performance Cars, and he used to dream up these things that lent that extra little bit of spice to the magazine package each month. And one of the things he dreamed up was kind of a parody of a car magazine article. He created this character called Dilbert Farb, and he dressed up as the character, and then he did things like road test a garbage truck, road test a child's car bed, And it was just hilarious when you read his stuff in the magazine, and it was that added little touch that just made cars a little different from all the other car magazines.
So it was like a little dash of Mad Magazine in with, yeah, like a little Alfred E. Newman.
Exactly. You know, National Lampoon, anything you want to think of that was satirical like that, that's, you know, that's what Dilbert Farb was. It was a satire on our own magazine in a way. And the ironic part today is Fred is a very successful public relations executive. He has his own public relations agency called Fred Makarot and Associates, and he, you know, he has car companies. He has the General Motors account for the entire East Coast, and he went entirely corporate, except he never did. You know, he shows up at the meetings in, you know, a flannel shirt, and he, you know, he's still the same guy, nice. But he's enormously successful today, and also a great friend.
That's great.
Wow, Dilbert Farb. That's incredible.
And, you know, I see these things, and now the more we get to speak with guys like you and Marty and such, I see circles being connected with other names being dropped in, who knows who. A lot of people know the same people, and mm-hmm. And it kind of makes sense that, you know, you would want to, you'd give us your time to talk to us because, you know, Dilbert Farb is kind of how we run our radio show.
Pretty much, yeah. You know? We're a satire on ourselves twice a week.
I look at your website, I'm in agreement with you. That's how you run your deal.
Yeah. It's all for fun.
We love the fact that car guys are really funny individuals.
Yeah.
The whole idea is drawing it out of them.
Yeah.
And that's the joy of what Ray and I like to do. We love to draw those stories out. And that's why I always try and ask, and I know Ray loves to dig into the crux of whoever we're talking to, but I always like to take it a step to the side and say, what was like the strangest road test you've ever done? Like, did you ever road test a child's bed, or did you ever road test a caddy brougham or something?
You know, I'll go you one further, Joe. You know, when I was thinking about Marty and all the stuff that he did, and I'm looking at, of course, his book is phenomenal, the motion performance book, Tales of a Muscle Car Builder, which, and it's kind of cool. The title is just almost the same as yours. I kind of like that. And your book, of course, which had me rapt, I couldn't put it down.
Yeah.
And you know, one of the things I think of, because I'm really into music, I always think of, like, what kind of music were these guys into? What were they listening to? What turned them on back then, you know, band-wise?
You know, it's funny you mention that. Right now, as you guys know, I am retired.
Mm-hmm.
But I do a little bit of freelance here and there. One of the magazines I write for is Hemming's Muscle Machines.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And I just did an article for them on muscle music.
Oh,
wow.
You know, the songs that were popular back then that were about cars.
Uh-huh.
And it brought back so many great memories. I went and I dug out some of my old 45s and took pictures of the label to illustrate the story, you know.
Cool.
You know, I mean, like the first street race ever recorded was Maybelline by Chuck Berry. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, back in the 50s. Yeah.
Right.
You know, it was his Ford racing her Coupe de Ville.
Right.
Exactly.
And it was really a street race if you listen to the words.
Sure.
And then, of course, all the Beach Boys.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Shut Down, mm-hmm. You know, a fuel-injected Stingray in a 413
mm-hmm.
Mopar. And, you know, there were so many songs back then that were specifically telling you about car experiences and street racing. It was really a reflection of our culture at that time.
Mm. Yeah, sure was. How ingrained it was.
Yeah, I you know, music, I think, if you follow the history of it, it kind of does reflect the culture that it was created in. So I think it was a great window onto what we were all doing back in the 60s, you know?
Yeah. Well, mm-hmm. again, like, the thing I thought of was, like, you know, I'm picturing you driving your, well, for a short time, your motion Camaro.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, like, you know, gee, was he listening to, like, you know, the Doors? Was he getting turned on by the Doors and Grand Funk, or was it more of a Fifth Dimension kind of guy, you know? Because you don't know. You know, it just, that those are little stupid things that intrigue me.
Right.
You know?
Well, what I was really into back then was doo-wop.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
And I was in some groups. I used to stand on the street corner and sing. And We made a few records, and so, and I'm still a great fan of that music because that was the music of my youth, you know. And I was a drummer, and I used to play in gigs locally, and so that was my music, the doo-wops. And then eventually, I evolved into jazz. I like jazz, and I still do. Some of the guys from the 50s and 60s, like Miles Davis, John Coltrane, and the big band stuff like Dizzy Gillespie. And so that and the doo-wop oldies, of course, they were newies then.
Right.
But, you know, that was my music.
Yeah, CBS, Don K. Reed didn't have an oldies show. He had a contemporary show.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you had Cousin Brucey, and you had... before him, Alan Freed and Murray the K, and all these New York DJs. And, you know, it's funny, you can still hear Cousin Bruce Morrow on a Sirius and XM radio.
Oh, yeah.
Some of these guys went over to the satellite radio business. So once in a while, you still hear them on the air. So.
Yeah, that's great.
Joe, we're going to take a quick break, but we are definitely going to leave you on, okay? Is that all right?
Okay, that's fine. I'm here for you guys.
Great. Let's play some music. We're going to come back with Joe Oldham, author of Muscle Car Confidential. You can catch it on Motorbooks if you'd like. And we'll be talking more, getting some great stories from Joe. Of course, Ray Guarino. I'm Chris Switzer. This is Motormouth Radio. Keep it where you got it.
We'll be back with answers to your car questions. Give us a call at 516-572-7440. Oh, I should have said Motor Mouth. The Motor Mouth will be right back with your car questions. Give us a call at 516-572-7440.
These days, carrying a mortgage can overwhelm even the strongest person.
Don't I know that?
But there is a way to help ease your struggle, especially if you're facing foreclosure. One option may be advice from a certified foreclosure prevention specialist. It's absolutely free. Don't struggle. Learn more at www.makinghomeaffordable.gov. That's makinghomeaffordable.gov. Because foreclosure is not a foregone conclusion. A message from HUD in partnership with the National Fair Housing Alliance.
Your car not running right? Let the Motormouths help you out at 516-572-7440.
Alrighty, welcome back to Motormouth Radio. We are not taking those calls because we have Joe Oldham on the line, author of Muscle Car Confidential, Tales of a Muscle Car Test Driver. Joe.
Joe, how is the book? Now, the book's been out for a while. How is it doing?
Yeah. excuse me, guys. It has been doing very well, I have to say. I'm really gratified that the public has accepted it as well as it has. A few months ago, it was reviewed in the Sunday New York Times very favorably.
Oh, wow.
That gave it a kick. And last December, the guy at Motorbooks that keeps track of this stuff told me that my book was the second best-selling book in all of Amazon.com.
Nice.
Wow.
Now, can they break that down regionally?
I'm sorry?
Can he break that down? Was he able to break it down regionally to know if the East Coast sales were higher than, say, West Coast sales?
Yeah, I'm sure he could. I didn't ask him that. I should have. It would be good to know.
I would like to see everybody in this area own this book.
Yeah.
They really should, because it makes your spine tingle when you see these. The photography is great. The stories are fantastic. But I'll say one thing. Marty Shore trumped you. He had a picture of Wetson's in his book.
That's true.
Yep.
That's true. That was one of the places we used to meet at and choose off and then go race. And you know, I was thinking, I knew I was going to be on with you guys, and I was thinking in that chapter that I have in the book on street racing in the New York area, quite a few of those photos were taken one night in Huntington.
Oh.
I don't know if it's still there. To be honest, I haven't been in that area in years, but there used to be a McDonald's right on Route 110. And we used
there
to
is.
Meet in the parking lot, and, you know, we used to be mouthing off to each other, what are you running? You know, I can take your ass up, pardon me.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and we used to, you know, talk trash to each other. And then we used to go down a little bit south to the Southern State Parkway, and we used to go on the service road heading east.
Oh, okay.
So that used to be one of the spots out there that, you know, we used to utilize, especially after 12 o'clock, there was no traffic on the service road.
Right.
And that's where we used to take it to the streets, guys. And I'll tell you, I spent many a Friday night out in Huntington. So it was one of the spots we used to frequent, yeah.
That's cool. I got to tell you something. I just met a fellow yesterday, a good friend of ours, a good friend of the show, Dan, took me out to meet a fellow who owned a carburetor business for 39 years. His name is Phil.
Mm-hmm.
Phil ran a carburetor shop in Atlantic Avenue near Woodhaven Boulevard in Ozone Park. It was called Fair Deal.
I used to have my Tri-Power setup rebuilt by him.
That's why I'm bringing it up. It was Fair Deal Carburetor. Phil should be listening now. And when I was, because I'm trying to get him as a guest on the show.
Uh-huh.
And I'm trying to sell the show, you know. So I'm throwing out the right. A-list. I said, listen, right. We had Marty Shaw, we had Joel. He said, Joe, did you say Joe Oldham? I'm like, yeah, why? Joe photographed my car, put it in a magazine. I was like, when? Last week? He's like, no, it was back in 72. You did it on Broad Channel, on Cross Bay Boulevard. He had a 69 Hurst Rambler.
Right.
And he said, you put it in Cars Magazine. So, again, it's like I said before about those circles connecting.
That's true.
It's just another one. So, Phil, if you're listening, get in here.
And I don't know if Phil remembers, but I bought a Tri-Power setup off a guy on Jamaica Avenue in Brooklyn, and I put it on my 59 Pontiac, and it didn't run. The carburetors really were messed up, and some guy said, oh, you got to go to this guy, you know, he's a magician with carburetors. I took it there, and he set up my system. He rebuilt two of the carbs. It ran fantastic after that. So wherever you are, thank you, guy. You made my Pontiac run well.
Yeah, well, Phil should be listening now, and I'm sure he's smiling out in the garage. So
that's great.
We'll get him in and talk to him about that, because he's not doing carburetors. He does them on the side, but,
right,
you know, because the business, of course, kind of dried up with the advent of fuel injection.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
But, it's cool when you hear names come back from the past in a positive way.
Everybody's connected to somebody, right?
Learning that.
In this hobby, I'm telling you, there's a lot more of it than I ever knew.
It is amazing. It is totally amazing how the web is woven so tightly. And,
right.
And we're just finding this out right now. Yeah. It's
And you guys like you and your show are the glue. You know, you all come to you, and that's what keeps us all stuck together.
Well, thank you. Someone close to us told us we were like the, like peanut brittle. It was kind of like, you know, like a family.
We stick to your shoe.
Yeah, the family's kind of like peanut brittle. It's the nuts and the goo that keep it together.
Right, we stick to the roof of your mouth.
And we took it as a compliment.
Yeah. Hey, whatever works.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Hey, Joe, I wanted to ask you, because I didn't get a chance last time.
Yeah.
I know back in between 65 and 75, you wrote a column called Torque East.
Right.
For Cars Magazine. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I had written some articles for the magazine, and Marty liked them, and he, you know, he said, look, why don't you write a monthly column instead of just, you know, car features and road tests, where you can give a little more of your opinion, you know, anecdotes, stuff that happens on the street, but keep it East Coast.
Yeah,
because
right.
He also asked a guy named John Asher, also a writer at that time, to do Torque West.
Oh, okay.
So he said, you know, you do the East stuff and he'll do the West stuff. And I wrote it for 10 years, and it was fun because I had my own platform. I could say just about anything I wanted. And
what were the
Marty
type of things?
Was always a very tell-it-like-it-is guy. And he allowed me to be the same way. And the other cool thing was we were very reader-supported. You know, we were a newsstand magazine that was supported by people who went into a candy store or a newsstand or whatever and purchased the magazine.
Right.
We didn't have that much advertising. So we didn't have to worry about, you know, getting some advertiser mad and losing the business and all of that kind of stuff. So we had the luxury of being able to tell it like it is, as they say.
You know, Joe, that parallels us right to the T. I mean, we're not advertiser-driven. This is free radio, and we have guys in, you know, bars and garages all over the place that support us. And because of that, we can do things. We have a wide latitude to do what we like.
That's great.
If we don't like a product, we'll be glad to say it. And if we do like a product, we'll be glad to say it as well. So it's true.
That gave us the freedom to also be honest with readers who were the actual supporters of the magazine.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I was able to write an article like I don't know if you guys remember it in the book, but the 71 AMC Javelin AMX.
The picture with the wheel laying off was the best picture in the book.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
You know, the wheel ripped off the car, left the guy who was driving at that time at an intersection with no right rear wheel on.
Incredible.
Just sheared the whole drum and everything off. And you saw it in the book. We took a picture. You know, we had it towed back eventually and repaired before we returned it. But we told the readers what happened.
Yeah, another great picture in the book is someone's prying the grill off the front of that car as well.
Here's a brand new car with, you know, 500 or 600 miles on it, and the grill is falling off, held on by one bolt.
Yeah,
so, you know,
incredible.
That was one of the problems of American Motors at the time, was quality control.
Mm-hmm.
And when we told the readers what had happened to the car, of course, I'm sure they liked it because they were being told the truth.
Right.
But the president of American Motors didn't care for it. And the day the magazine came out, you know, he called our office quite irate.
Really?
And I think back to that day and that phone call, and here was the guy, the head of a major corporation at the time, American Motors, and he takes the time to, you know, call a writer at a magazine because he didn't like the article that was published.
Yeah, newsstand
Instead
magazine.
Instead of tending to his own business and tackling the quality control issues.
Yeah,
good point.
Or the dealer problems or whatever. And, of course, eventually American Motors went under.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, that guy, Gerald C. Myers, is a professor of business now at the University of Michigan.
Wow.
So I guess if you fail in business, that gives you the right to teach.
There you go.
Right, those who can't do...
teach.
That's right. Teach, exactly, that old saying.
I was going to say, Joe, you know, in that instance, there's no guy I'd want to be standing behind besides, you know, Marty Shore. He's a great guy to have going to bat for you with that because I wouldn't cross his path, I don't think. Even today, I wouldn't cross his path.
But I just think about the far-reaching way that magazine went right to the top of the American Motors president.
They were listening.
You know, it's and I always feel if they don't threaten your life, you're not getting to them.
Exactly.
So
I remember, you know, we all happened to be, I don't know, talking about something in one of the cubicles, and the person who answered the phone said, "Joe, there's a call for you. It's the president of American Motors." And, you know, we all looked at each other. You know, nobody ever called us presidents and stuff, you know.
Yeah.
I said, "You mean it's somebody calling for the president? You know, like maybe his flunky or assistant?" She said, "No, it's him himself."
My gosh.
So. Yeah, that's... You hit a chord, all right.
That's incredible. Boy. That is incredible.
I'm in a way, it was right that he responded, but, you know, not in the right way.
Mm-hmm.
He should have taken care of the problems we pointed out.
He could have had an engineer call and say, "Hey, what are the problems? We want to
there
address
you
them."
Go.
Right.
That would have been the more enlightened approach.
Sure.
And that happened other times, by the way.
Oh, okay.
Where, you know, the transmission engineer would call and say, "Hey, I read you had a problem. You know, what can we do to explain what happened?
Sure.
Well, can we look at it? Blah, blah, blah."
Yeah. That's
so that
the man's job.
The more enlightened approach. But he took, you know...
Incredible.
I wonder if he teaches that in class now.
Yeah,
you know, if somebody gets you mad, you know, call up yourself and start screaming and yelling. Don't fix the problem, though.
Right. Or maybe he's listening to the show.
Well, yeah, right. Well,
right.
You would think
he is.
You would think that he'd go for the editor of the magazine, somebody up high.
Right.
You know, don't go for the test driver. Go for the guy's boss if you're really going to make a stink.
Right.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
Wow, everything is wrong about that.
I'll tell you the truth. I wouldn't want to be the president talking to the guy who was driving when the wheel actually fell off.
Right.
That would be an interesting conversation.
Your life threatened.
Exactly.
Yeah, I see a piece of crap. Get over here. I'm going to wrap the drum around your neck, you slob.
Yeah, we should have sued them. That would have been a cool article.
Exactly. That would have been nice reading right there.
Well, that's what impressed me about the way that learning, how, as I am now, how Marty ran Cars Magazine with that same ethic.
Right.
And then, of course, he mentions that, you know, he got you on board, who was right on the same page. That's a great team. And plus, you guys had the best sideburns. You know, Marty had those long sideburns.
Marty had those mutton chops, boy.
That was cool.
Wow. He really had them working then.
Yeah. Hey, well, that was the time.
I was more into the mustache part of it.
And you had the cool hat in the picture. That was nice.
The handlebar and stuff.
Yeah.
You guys were so cool. It's amazing.
And, you know, another thing I pick up, because I'm a detail guy. I always have been.
Uh-huh.
And I know it's, you know, if someone tried to pawn these books off as being fakes, I'd say no way. They're all wearing desert boots. And boots was the shoe of choice. I even had them. I had, you know, a couple. Tom McCann used to sell them.
Mm-hmm.
Tom McCann, I got a confession. I still have a pair.
Nice. Nice. They're comfortable, right?
They are.
My friend Vinny still wears. Vinny Out and Shirley still wears desert boots. Yeah.
Joe Ray has shoes from high school he still wears.
Yeah, I do.
He still has a jacket from high school he still wears.
Yeah,
you can get into it. It's amazing.
I think I'm older than even you, Ray.
Yes.
I have socks that are older than you.
Hey, that's okay. That's okay. As long as you're around to talk about it, that's what I want to hear.
There you go.
That's cool.
Joe, we're going to take a quick break. Can we bring you back?
Absolutely.
Hang out.
I always have to ask. Joe Oldham, author of Muscle Car, Confidential Tales of a Muscle Car Test Driver. We'll be coming back right after these good words on Motormouth Radio.
We'll be back with answers to your car questions. Give us a call at 516-572-7440. Oh, I should have said the Motormouth thing.
Ladies, dry your eyes. The Motormouths are coming right back.
I'm Ben Affleck. Many actors have played the part of U.S. servicemen in the movies. But for veterans like James Crosby, their service and their sacrifice are real. And too often when they come home, their struggle continues. For over 60 years, Paralyzed Veterans of America has been fighting to help our injured veterans get the benefits they need and have earned.
Paralyzed Veterans of America was there for me when I came home.
Join me in supporting our paralyzed veterans. Visit PVA.org.
A public service of Paralyzed Veterans of America.
Your car not running right? Let the Motormouths help you out at 516-572-7440.
All righty. Welcome back to Motormouth Radio, where we're talking to Joe Oldham, author of Muscle Car, Confidential Tales of a Muscle Car Test Driver. Joe, what were we talking about over the break? What would you like to bring up?
You know, I was just talking about the president of American Motors getting mad at us because he didn't like what we wrote.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want to make the impression that we discounted when readers disagreed with us.
Right.
It's an entirely different story. So I want to tell you, for instance, we used to write some negative articles about Mopars in those days. And
the reason being,
they really didn't come up to snuff in quality issues.
And the famous one that I remember was the Hemi Cuda convertible, right?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, there were others. Chrysler just didn't put together a car very well in those days. You'd get a test car. Now, you know, you're a magazine. You're going to write to a national audience. You think that the cars would be as well put together as they could be, but it wasn't the case.
Yeah.
So we'd get a test car. The carpet would be pulling up. It'd be knobs, you know, falling off. The headliner would be hanging down. Whatever. And, you know, true to the reader's interest, we would tell it like it is, and we would report that stuff. And sometimes the cars didn't run right. For instance, street Hemis in those days did not run that well on the street because they had big ports, big valves, 2 4-barrel carburetors. They didn't make much low-end torque.
Right.
They were dynamite top-end. But, you know, not many guys were running top end on the Southern State Parkway.
Right.
Over
now.
100 miles an hour. It was more light to light stuff. Right.
And then you got into a factory. So then tell me, you got into like a
40s ran better light to light the way you got them off the showroom floor. And this is the kind of stuff we would write. And we'd get Mopar lovers, bless their souls, who would write us letters, you know, like things about our mother. You know, our grandmother, you know, you...
Well,
you know...
But from being from New York, you know how to take that.
Write that about Mother Mopar, you know. And so we like the passionate car owners.
Yeah.
And when they disagreed with us, that was fine. That was their privilege.
Right.
With the magazine.
You had a laugh. You had a laugh.
Yeah. You know. I still have a couple of the letters. They're classics, you know.
Great. I'm sure, you know, you've wanted to fire off a few witty retorts of your own. Because, like I said, being from New York, that stuff doesn't surprise you. You,
yeah,
you heard that,
right.
You heard that growing up.
In fact, you know, we used to say the more we rile up the readers, the better our readership.
There you go.
So,
yep.
Not that we were going out of our way to look for negatives, but when they were there, we reported them.
Mm-hmm. I believe it. And especially when you talk about a Hemi Cuda or a Hemi Challenger, they had skid plates under them because the silly things wouldn't stop. Or when they stopped, they dove.
They bottomed out.
Yeah, they would bottom out. I'm like, I'm looking under the car going, what's this? What's this?
You know, my classic analogy is in 1970, they built 14 Hemi Cuda convertibles.
Mm-hmm.
In 71, they built 11.
Right.
You don't think Chrysler Corporation wanted to sell 20,000
yes.
instead of 11 or 14?
Why did they do that?
Right.
Yeah. Exactly, because nobody bought them.
Mm-hmm. Everybody understood supply and demand, yeah.
Yeah, you know, they were expensive dogs.
Right.
They did not run well. And now they're objects of art.
Well,
selling
yeah.
at auction for $1 million.
More.
You know?
Chrysler had the last laugh.
You wanted them. You could buy as many as you wanted back in 70.
Joe, tell us a little bit about the 340 Duster, right? Didn't they kick those cars' butts all the time? Like the 340 Duster or the Demon?
Yeah, the 340. Everybody wanted a big block.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it reminds me of the Z28 Camaro. Nobody really wanted them then because everybody was into the big cubic inches.
Yeah.
But the small block cars ran really well on the street. And if you put a gear in the back, you know, from light to light, they were dynamite.
I tell you, you know, a solid lifter LT1 in a Z28 was the way to go.
Yeah.
I mean, not
yeah,
even
absolutely.
The DZ. You can go later on into the 70s. That friend Vinny with the desert boots, he still has a Z28. This is a 73, I believe, with an LT1 on it. You know,
yeah,
so,
those were good running cars. And, you know, you put it like a 410 gear or something.
That's it.
I'll tell you, they wound right out, and you were at the next light, and the other guy was wondering where the hell you went.
Yeah, 8 grand shifts, no problem.
Right.
Even with a stock engine. That's, it's true. But and even in road racing, that was the thing. People just didn't realize. Everybody wanted the big engine, but the small, lighter engines were better for... Look, Trans Am Series always used smaller engines.
Absolutely.
But, Joe, you had to love it when you drive a Hemi, a street Hemi, that underperformed, and then you could get into almost any stock Pontiac, Olds, or Buick with that beautiful torque curve.
Right.
You know, Buick, a 455 Buick, 500 foot-pounds of torque at like 1,800 RPM.
Fantastic.
I mean, just tire smoke galore, you know?
And, you know, guys that bought GM cars were able to drive them right off the showroom floor and really, they ran fine. That was not the case with some of the other cars, you know, especially the Hemi cars.
Right. I'm sure the Ford Cameras.
Tune them. Yeah, you had to get into them.
Yeah.
Later on, when smog controls came in and they were retarding ignition and leaning out the carburetors, even on the GM cars, You did have to do some tuning. You had to recurve the distributor, crank in more advance, maybe drill out the jets in the carburetor to get more gas going in. But it was nothing like it was to tune one of the big Mopars. No. So.
Well, that was the demise of your GTO, was the tunability factor, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. What a shame.
Joe, what did you actually enjoy testing? What didn't you want to give back? Like, you'd get a car and say, nah, I'm going to keep this one for another week.
He knew he had another one coming.
True, yeah.
You want to tell you, all the Baskin-Robbins flavors, you know?
What did you really like?
Before I answer that, I have to tell you, it was a great job, but at times it was a job.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't wait to get it over with, get the day over with, you know?
Yeah, it
seems funny now looking back, but... There are times where it would be like a December Saturday afternoon at 5:30. It had just gotten dark, and I was at the track trying to get a last shot in, and it would be freezing cold.
Yeah, right.
And I hated cars at that moment.
Yeah,
you know?
Sure. That's understandable.
I just wanted to get to the nearest bar,
you
know, have a scotch or something, whatever.
Yeah.
Just get away from cars, you know?
Exactly.
That's inherent, yeah.
Yeah, it had its... times when it was a job, and like any other job, you know, you just want to get rid of it.
Mm-hmm.
But then there were the times where You know, I'd be driving a convertible through the San Gabriel Mountains east of L.A. and
wow.
You know, and getting paid for it. And I'd look at, you know, whoever was with me. And actually, I can remember just smiling and saying to the guy, hey, we're getting paid for this.
Not a bad gig.
So,
yeah, nice work if you can get it.
It had its good points and bad points. But I think as far as, you know, what cars I didn't want to give back, that's a great question. And I think it would have to be some of the GM stuff. Mm. You know, you just mentioned Buicks, you know, in like in 1970 with the Stage 1 cars with the 500 foot-pounds of torque.
Right.
I'll tell you, they were fantastic to drive on the street.
And you could drive, you know,
all the power in the world, yet, you know, they weren't jumpy on you. They weren't stalling out or coughing or wheezing.
You you could literally.
I remember driving a GSX, what do they call it? A Saturn Yellow.
Saturn Yellow, or Apollo White, the only two colors.
Exactly. And we had to wait till the end of the New York Auto Show to test the car, because the car we tested was the car on the turntable at the show.
Oh, great.
And when they closed the show, you know, they handed the car over to me. And I remember that car making such an impression on me because it was a Buick and it had luxury touches some of the other GM cars didn't have.
Right. It wasn't your grandfather's Buick.
Yeah, there you go. And yet it had all this power and it handled really well with those big G60 15
the wide
ovals, and I remember saying, man, I'd like to own this car. Yeah. You know,
well, Buicks were, and Oldsmobiles were always, and Pontiacs were the top line, cushy. You know, they were better appointed than the Chevys and Chevys were, and of course that. And the thing that I always loved about it is you could literally slide out of the seat, let your wife or girlfriend take the helm, and she could drive the car just as easily as you did.
That's a great point. Yep, you know? they weren't very fussy or you know, hard to drive in any way. They were just like a normal car if you wanted to drive it that way.
Yeah.
But if you jumped on it, man, I'll tell you, those things were... You know, even now you go to the drag races some days and you see some guy in a 455 Buick and he's turning like 11-something.
Mm-hmm. All day long.
Yeah, and, you know, those things just ran, man. Yeah.
And he's in a 4,000-pound car.
Yes, exactly.
Close to it.
Yeah. It's true. Yeah. You think about the numbers then. They were extraordinary. And at one time, I think the GS Stage 1 in 1970 was like faster than a Corvette.
Yeah.
They
yeah.
talked about.
Yeah.
And a lot of purists didn't want to believe that. Not a Buick.
Right.
No.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, that's, you know, they never wanted that out in advertising because being the, you know, the halo car, the Corvette, even the Camaro, some of the Camaro engines were just as powerful, if not more so,
right.
But they'd always underrate it so that the Corvette had the top spot.
Joe!
You know, they'd rate the engine at a lower RPM.
Right.
Trick.
Yeah.
So that it wasn't, you know, quote, outpowering a Corvette.
Out of the power curve.
And kept the insurance companies probably nice and calm as well.
Yeah, that helped them, too.
Joe, as a writer, who did you look up to as a writer? When, you know, I know, because I think of it this way. As a radio guy, I like to appropriate different styles from other radio people. So do writers do the same thing?
Well, I know I did. When I was still in college, some days I used to go to a newsstand and buy like 10 car magazines, and instead of going to class, I'd sit in my car in the parking lot and just read car magazines.
Nice. We still do it.
I know it's, you know, I don't want, I'm glad maybe my kids did do the same thing, I don't know, but I hope they didn't. But in any case, I came to read a guy named Roger Huntington, who was an extraordinary person. I'll tell you a little bit about him in a minute. I got to know him later on, but he used to write in a way that I just could relate to. And when I was still taking journalism classes in college, I used to try to emulate his style.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a great influence on my early career because he kind of pointed the way to expressing yourself about cars and engines and suspensions. And I was just so taken with the guy and his writing style that, as I said, I tried to emulate him.
Right.
And Later on, I found out, I met him at some press events, and he was a quadriplegic who was always assisted by someone, and he would test the car by being lifted into the car, strapped into the passenger seat, and he'd have all his instrumentation and stuff.
Wow.
And he would get his sensations through the passenger seat and then write his articles.
Wow. He might have, you know, because of his condition, he may have had more insight than other people. Yeah.
Right. More sensitive to acceleration and deceleration and handling and G-forces.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
I'm sure that entered into it.
Mm-hmm.
But he was an extraordinary guy, and I feel like I owe him a lot in terms of learning to write to an audience and conveying thoughts about cars and parts. And he was a great influence on me. Mm-hmm. So thank you for asking that.
I can tell you this, if you want to take that influence and write a second part of this book, you know there's a couple guys here going to pick it up right away.
You betcha. Exactly.
It's infectious.
Thank you, Ray and Chris. You guys are great.
I
love coming on the show. You make me feel like I'm actually good.
Well, Joe, you are. you were, you are, and, what can we say?
Thank you. Thank you, guys.
Can we keep you on for one more break?
Sure, absolutely.
All right.
All righty. We're going to do...
I'm loving it.
We're going to do this one more time with Joe Oldham, author of Muscle Car Confidential, right here at Motor Mouth Radio with Ray Guarino and Chris Switzer. So keep it where you got it.
Let the Motor Mouth help you with all of your car questions at 516-572-7440.
This is your potted plant. You can't see it because this is radio.
We're listening to the Motor Mouths. There's a criminal on the loose. It could be in your area.
In fact, it could be in your backyard.
It's the Asian longhorned beetle, a black and white insect, and it's a tree killer.
Thing is, in cold weather, it goes into hiding inside the trees.
So, we need your help.
Don't move firewood. It can spread the beetle.
Buy it locally. Burn it locally.
If you want to protect the trees, it's as simple as black and white. Don't move firewood.
Learn more at beetlebusters.info. A message from the USDA.
Got a car question? Give the Motor Mouths a call at 516-572-7440.
Welcome back to Motor Mouth Radio. And we're not taking those calls because we have Joe Oldham, author of Muscle Car Confidential, Tales of a Muscle Car Test Driver. Joe, tell us a little bit about what I think is the most famous car you've tested. Because I actually, as a young adult, read the article, and I was amazed at your true portrayal of the 70 Hemi Cuda convertible.
I have to say, Joe, when I brought the idea of trying to get you on the show the first time to Chris, and I said, look, I got this book, you got to see it, and I held up the book, I said, this thing is just like so right in our lap, it's like it was written for us. Mm. I said, this guy, we got to talk to this guy. And he said, who wrote it? I said, Joe Oldham. He says, Joe Oldham, I read his test report on the Hemi Cuda.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, wow, excellent.
And I love the fact that you, in a way, panned it and badmouthed it. And at the time, the car was just coming into vogue, I would say. And I'm like, how can this guy have the guts, have the cojones to actually give the car, like, I don't know, not a favorable thing. So can you tell us a little bit about it?
First of all, thank you guys for the kind words you're saying about my book and my writing. When somebody appreciates something you do, it really makes you feel grateful. So thank you again for everything you're saying.
More than welcome,
but
Joe.
Thank you.
Car, I think it's one of the most interesting stories that I have lived through in all my years, because in late 1969, I guess it was in about November or December, right after the 70 model year, if you remember, October 1st is when the new cars used to come out.
Right,
so
right.
In October 1st, 69, the 70s were introduced.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the cars that was completely new for 1970 was the Barracuda.
Right.
It had been a Valiant with a fastback, big glass roof,
mm-hmm.
if
mm-hmm.
you remember. And they changed it into more like a Camaro-style pony car.
Exactly.
And it was a beautiful car.
Yeah.
And one night, Marty Shore, my boss, said, Joe, there's a 70 Barracuda convertible, and it's got the Street Hemi engine in it. You know, go pick it up, you know, do your thing, drive it for a week, write a road test, blah, blah, blah. So I go to the garage to pick up the car where Chrysler at the time kept their press fleet of cars.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell the guy I'm here to pick up the 70 Barracuda convertible. He says, it's over there in the corner. So I walk over, and the first thing I see is a big pool of red fluid coming out from under the car.
And, of course, you're in New York, so you figured it was a mob hit.
Yeah, right. Yeah, there could have been a body in it. Right. You know. So anyway, you know, I pick up a little. I see it's transmission fluid, a problem already.
Already.
So I get in the car. I start it up. It's kind of slipping, but it will move, you know. The transmission is slipping. So I get it to a gas station, which, by the way, is not easy to find in the middle of Manhattan.
No, this is true.
Right. So I put 3 quarts of transmission fluid in it.
Wow.
Get it home. The next day I was going to go to Englishtown to test it and photograph it. I come down in the morning. There's more fluid dripping. I fill it back up. I get to the track. I pull up to the starting line, shoot a few still shots, and then the guy that I had with me to drive while I shot the photos, I tell him, all right, you know, make a run. Let's see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
So he didn't do a burnout or anything. He just jumped on the gas to make, you know, a run to test the traction and whatever. As soon as he jumped on it, the seal blew in the transmission.
Great.
Fluid all over the starting line. The owners of Englishtown were furious.
Yeah, they like that.
Yeah. So, you know, I called a truck. We flatbedded it back to Manhattan. I calmed down the owners, you know. So get a phone call about a week later. Okay, the it's repaired. Go pick it up. I go back, pick the car up. Now I look under. It's dripping a little bit now. It's not pouring out like it was. So at least they stopped most of the leak.
Right.
Go to the track the next day. It's slipping, but we get some runs in. It doesn't run that well. Hemis, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, they never did. But this, in addition, had the transmission slip. So it ran about, I don't know, 1390, 14-something.
Hmm.
Like a mediocre run.
Yeah.
A car that you would expect to run much better. But we got the photos. We did the article. I wrote it up like it was. I said it ran like crap. And got a lot of protest letters, you know, threats to my grandmother again, you know. So I didn't think anything of it. But it turns out that that car, that particular Hemi Barracuda, became a very famous car.
Mm-hmm.
It was number one. It was the first one that they built in 1970. Second of all, they only built 14 of them in the whole year.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah.
Third of all, it was the only one that was red with red upholstery.
Uh-huh.
And, like, you know, the Danbury Mint used that particular car to do their model. It became very well known in collector circles. Now, this is all going on a matter of years later.
Sure.
Of course, that day when I dumped the transmission fluid all over the starting line, I didn't give a crap that it was going to be a collector car. All I wanted to do was, you know, my job, get it done, and go home.
And that day your job wasn't too easy.
Exactly. Right. That was one of those days I was telling you about a few minutes ago, where it's 5:30 and freezing cold, and you want to get the hell out of there.
So what happened 30 years later? Unfortunately, we only have about six minutes left in the show, so we're going to have to kind of accelerate this.
All right. First of all, about 10 years later, I'm walking down a car show, and I see the front of a red Barracuda sticking out of the line of cars. I go over. It's the car. In fact, the guy had just bought it for $150,000 and had my article framed as part of his display. display.
Nice.
That's awesome.
Okay, so now it's 30 years later.
Yeah.
I get a call from a friend of mine, Cliff Gromer, who was the editor of Mopar Action Magazine. He says, remember that Hemi Barracuda you tested? Yeah. He says, well, the guy who owns it now bought it for $2 million, and he's doing a full restoration, and he wants to know if you want to drive it again after it's done.
So, did you ask him, does he want a spare gallon of tranny fluid for that, yeah, for that resto? Right.
So here's the funny part. I go to Scottsdale, where the guy lives, and I'm told, go back to the garage. He'll be right in.
Right.
So I walk into this building behind his house, and it's like this guy's private Mopar museum.
Wow.
Got like 25 Barracudas and Challengers and Roadrunners and GTXs and all these rare cars, and there is the red Barracuda convertible.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't help myself.
You did.
I had to bend down and see if it was still leaking. Finally, they fixed the transmission.
Yeah.
But at that moment, the guy walks in who owns it, and he sees me, and he says, Joe, what are you looking for, transmission leak? he actually had the magazine with my article in his hand.
Incredible.
He asked me to sign it. And the next day, he had rented the local drag strip so we could go drive the car in peace.
Mm-hmm.
And on the way there, he wanted me to drive it.
Right.
And, he paid $2 million for it, spent another $350,000 restoring it.
Wow.
Like, I'm babying the car, you know?
Sure.
Scared. He says, what are you doing? So I said, I'm driving your car. Excuse me. He says, pull over. I pull over. What's wrong? He says, I don't want you to baby this car. I want you to drive it like you did 33 years ago.
Right.
Okay. I got on it, dumped the brake pedal, did a burnout off the side of the road.
Nice.
Opened all 8 barrels up, listen to that great sound of that.
Yeah.
All that Twin air quarters. Being sucked in. Did burnouts at the track. The guy loved it.
That must have felt great for you.
It was great because if you think about it, driving the exact same car 33 years later, it's like, it's almost unreal.
Yeah.
And the amazing thing was, of all the restoration, he never touched the interior because
wow.
it never deteriorated.
Oh.
So my butt was on the same seat cover
right.
it was on 33 years before.
Nice.
Was it any faster the second time around?
No. The transmission still slipped even though it didn't leak. And it ran almost identical times to that first day we tracked.
It's like I always say. It should have been a 4-speed car.
There you go.
Exactly.
There you go.
I need that the third pedal and the happy stick to make me smile.
That's it.
Joe, I cannot believe how fast this hour went.
It's over already?
Yes, it is.
Yes, sir.
Let's do another hour.
Well, we will.
Extend your show.
Well, unfortunately, we have the ladies who are coming in right after us with a live show, so we can't bump them, but we will. We'd love to get you back and do this again.
Okay, I'd love to do it, guys.
We'll be in touch.
Joey's fun.
Joe, thank you so much.
Take care, man.
We'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Stand by. Joe Olam, author of Muscle Car Confidential Tales of a Muscle Car Test Driver.
It's too bad he's on the other side of the country. I could sit with guys like him and Marty and our other friends for hours and just, those are the guys you want to bench race with. I mean, those are the guys you want to listen to.
Yeah.
Bench race. Because our stories are inconsequential.
It's amazing. Yeah. It is amazing how just to hear the stories and almost like be there.
Yeah.
It, almost like be there 30 years later.
He just hasn't lost his edge.
No,
he
hasn't.
That right his edge. Boy.
And,
love that.
It is amazing that he wants to do another hour with us.
Yeah. Yeah, if it met us in person, you'd probably think different.
Come
on, nice guys.
I've known you for how long, and I still think differently.
Yeah. We'd feed him cookies, get some Stradale and some.
I got to do another show with my longtime radio colleague again.
Yeah, which we will do on Sunday. By the way, we're open. We may be having a Centurion Cruisers event in the parking lot. It's yet to be determined. But I sent Frank an email this morning and apprised him of the situation, so we'll see what happens.
And who are we having on next Thursday?
Next Thursday, we have Dennis. We have Brian Higgins from S&K Performance at 109 in on Long Island here.
Right, the other half of S&K, because we had Ernie Krieg on.
Ernie Krieg with Coney Island Ralph Lindahl a few weeks ago.
And that show is still on the site at motormouthradio.com.
Right, now we'll have Dennis, and we'll talk about transmissions.
No, we're going to have Brian.
Brian, I said Dennis. There's so many Dennis's last night. I met a new Dennis. It's in my head. I'm sorry. Brian Higgins. Yeah.
Brian Higgins, Thursday. This next Thursday, right? But we will talk on Sunday.
I'm loopy from talking to Joe. He's got me back. I'm still thinking like Hemi Kuda's muscle cars, 500 foot pounds. I haven't directed back to the business side of the show. Believe it or not, there is one.
For Ray Guarino, I'm Chris Switzer. This is Motormouth Radio. We will talk on Sunday.
Yes. See ya.
See ya.